You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme. Hello and welcome to the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. This week, we're going to be looking at the restorative power of nature and how gardening can relieve stress and help with our mental health. To do this, we're going to be talking to the author of The Well Gardened Mind, Sue Stewart-Smith.
She worked in the NHS for many years, becoming the lead clinician for psychotherapy in Hertfordshire. She's married to Tom Stewart-Smith, the celebrated garden designer, and over 30 years together, they've created the wonderful Barn Garden in Hertfordshire. Her book, The Well Gardened Mind, was published in 2020 and became a Sunday Times bestseller and has been translated into 15 different languages.
I wanted to start by asking you where your love of gardening comes from. Have you always been into gardening? Is it something that you enjoyed as a child, or is it something you found and discovered later in life?
It came to me after I got married to my husband, Tom Stewart-Smith, who has long been a passionate gardener and is a now actually quite a celebrated garden designer. So before we married, I really didn't know anything much about gardening. I hadn't really had much experience of it. I was a great nature lover though. So I have to confess that in my sort of early 20s, I think I regarded gardening as something akin to outdoor housework. only perhaps a little bit nicer to be outdoors if the sun was shining, as it were. So it was really falling in love with him and getting married, and then beginning to start a family and beginning to create a garden together at our home, which we still live in Hertfordshire, that I sort of decided, okay, you know, the man I love loves this. I'm going to find my way into it too. But it did take me quite a while because we were making a garden from scratch. So we live in a barn and it's on a hill and it was surrounded by an arable field. So it was quite a slow, arduous process, creating a garden and carving out a little plot for ourselves. It was only when our youngest child was five and went to primary school by which time I was in my early 30s, that I sort of thought, now's the time for me to have a little plot of my own. And I started growing herbs, partly culinary herbs, because I love cooking, mm-hmm. but also as a doctor, I was interested in growing some medicinal herbs. And that really is what's, you know, I got hooked by that. I got hooked by growing things from seed, for example. I love, and I still love that. I love watching the process of germination. I think it's an extraordinary instance of witnessing something of the mystery of life, really, life coming into being.
And I was thinking it's lovely, actually, when you have a child as well, you have that parallel play. I remember when my boys were old enough, we could get Lego, and it meant that I could join in with them. And I think gardening is another thing where you can do that thing together, and you can kind of discover something through their eyes, which is very beautiful sometimes.
Well, there was a sense of togetherness, not always, I would say, through the gardening, but the little herb patch that I had, the little herb garden that I was sort of mine, as it were, in the midst of a much bigger garden, was right next door to the sand pit that we'd created for the children. And the little sort of wigwammy, kind of Wendy house kind of structure. So you're right, there was a parallel sense of play.
There's something really magical, isn't there? Like you said, about watching a seed germinate and watching something, you know, grow and kind of be created, and also that sense of patience. I think it's a journey, isn't it, gardening, in terms of watching something happen and being patient, and then slowly seeing the kind of I don't like the word outcome when it comes to gardening, because I don't think it really fits, but watching that plant, that herb, that fruit actually kind of come into existence, I think is probably also like a bit of a metaphor for life. And I know that my mum and sister are very, very into gardening, and I've slowly started to become a little bit more into the whole process of it. I'm very good at kind of getting out there in the garden with like a big saw or like a big fork and doing something kind of big, but I'm not so good at the little bits. But they've definitely helped teach me a sense of patience, a sense of looking at the smaller details and almost enjoying the whole idea of creating and designing and watching something of your own grow.
Yes, I think that is important. And I do think there are, I know you say it's not outcomes, but I do think there are tangible rewards for gardening that are, you know, not to be underestimated, you know, whether that's sort of harvesting your own pumpkins and, you know, bringing them into the house and creating a soup that a whole family can share, or just, you know, foraging in the garden, you know, picking, I love growing wild strawberries, for example, you know, picking little things like that. But I think you're right. The process is very much part of it. And that sense of slowing down, you cannot speed up the growth of plants. You know, you have to anticipate, you know, changes in your garden in nature's time frame. But there are real positives to that as well. And I think we saw that very clearly at the start of the pandemic. You know, when, if you think back to that first spring, and there was such a rush on seeds, and there was, you know, the garden centres were overwhelmed. People couldn't keep up with the orders, and some cases sold out. That, you know, it was a very clear instance of how gardening can give you a sense of a future when other avenues to imagining a future or looking forward to something are, for whatever reason, foreclosed. And, you know, universally around the world, really, everybody's plans were cancelled at that point in time. You couldn't look forward to family gatherings or weddings or holidays or anything. But when you start to garden, and particularly at that point in spring, you know, your mind is looking ahead with a positive sense of anticipation of whether it's the flowers you're going to, you know, going to be coming into bloom in 3 months' time, or the produce you're going to harvest. And that's a very important aspect of gardening in terms of our mental health. That sense of, you know, having a positive vision of a little bit of a future, being able to shape a little bit of our lives. Because when people are suffering from depression or anxiety, or have been traumatized, the future is very problematic. It becomes a negative thing, or it becomes an anxiety provoking thing. So gardening can help shift people, you know, out of that state in a very simple but effective way.
Mm. I remember during the pandemic and kind of being, I mean, I love being outside. I spend a day where I'm not outside because I kind of just get cabin fever. But I remember really reflecting on sort of social media at the time about how, you know, nature was the only thing that was kind of giving me hope, that sense of, like you say, a future, that sense of the possibility that things could get better. And I think, like you say, in a very dark time, nature gave us hope, it gave us continuity, it gave us constancy. But it also gave us, I think, as well as constancy, it gave us a sense of change, that actually this will pass too. You know, this won't be forever. And I think there's so many lessons from nature, aren't there, that we can gain if we just kind of spend more time out there. If we really look for nature wherever we are, there are so many life lessons and so many comforting things, I think, as well about nature, that can really help us in those really dark times.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there were many, many beneficial effects during that dark period from nature. I think at a fundamental level, you know, seeing other forms of life that were thriving and healthy when the human world was so struck down with sickness and fear, that was enormously important. The beauty of nature, I think people took real pleasure in the beauty of nature. And in those kind of more mindful activities like bird watching, or, you know, getting stuck into weeding in the garden and so on. So having time to do those kind of simple but rhythmical, meditative, sort of immersive activities and experiences in the natural world. And those kind of states, those immersive states in a natural setting are really, they're part of our DNA at some level. You know, they're what our hunter-gatherer forebears, our remote ancestors. It's what they spent a lot of their day in those sort of states. And they're actually, you know, it's a state that is quite replenishing for the brain. So there are many health benefits from experiencing that sort of break in our, you know, change, shift from our very screen-based sort of task focused kind of often quite fragmented kind of forms of attention, you know, that actually when we can get out and experience a sense of losing ourselves in a way, and nature's very good at inducing that in people.
Yeah, it really, I think for me, like you said, there's so much science, isn't there, and so much research about nature and gardening, and there's more and more, which is actually fantastic. But I think on the other side of that, I mean, maybe science is magic, but I think there's also a lot of magic to gardening and to nature, which we'll probably never fully understand. And I think the sort of the first book that I ever read that really showed that to me was The Secret Garden, which I absolutely love as a book, and I used to listen to the audiobook all the time when I was growing up, and I still do occasionally. I think earlier in the conversation you were talking about the first time you said, right, I'm going to get myself a little plot of land. And that reminded me really of The Secret Garden, when, you know, she's this small girl has come to a different country. She's lonely. She doesn't understand. She doesn't really know where she is. And she finds her way to kind of being who she is and finding kind of happiness and a sense of home through being given a plot of land, a little bit of garden. And then the whole beauty of how her having that responsibility to nurture it, to look after it, to take care of it, actually reflects back in her. And obviously her character then thrives and grows, and she's actually really nurturing herself. And I think that story for me really emphasizes the reflection of how when we do get into nature and we do look after nature, we are actually in itself looking after ourselves. And it helps us grow our sense of connectedness to nature. It helps us look after the environment and protect the earth, and it's beneficial for everyone and everything, I think.
I absolutely love that book too, and like you, I grew up with it. I think it's a very powerful story, and of course Frances Hodgson Burnett was a great gardener, and she gardened well into her 80s, I mean, till months before she died. And one of the things she wrote at that point in her life was that as long as you have a garden, you have a sense of a future, which is very helpful in old age when you know, other forms of future can seem closed off to you. But I think I was just thinking what you, when you were talking about, you know, how when we nurture the earth, we are in turn nurtured, that that's very much what happens to Mary and Colin in that book. And that they, you know, they're both, well, Colin has lost his mother, she's died, and he's effectively lost his father, who's gone off abroad, and can't bear the sight of him because he reminds him of his mother. And Mary has been orphaned and has come over from India. And there is something about, there's a phrase that Jung used about gardening and our connection with the soil, which was our need to connect with the dark maternal ground of our being. And there is something about that, you know, this is the source of life. And I think, you know, if you look, read that book closely, you can sort of see that they kind of, they re-find their mothers in the garden through the beauty of nature, through the roses that come back to life. And I think it's a deep metaphor in that book is about Mother Earth.
Mm, oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, there you go. We need to get together and have a little reading party, I think, you and me.
Yes.
I remember watching a while back a news story about refugee camps in the Middle East. I think it was in Syria, actually. Yeah, that a lot of the residents of the refugee camp were making their own gardens, and they were, you know, able to start to grow their own food and stuff, and how much hope and joy it brought to the residents on the you know, the refugees on these camps, and how much it had such a positive impact on them through such a very, very challenging time for them. I wondered, obviously you've written this wonderful book, The Well Gardened Mind. When was there a particular moment where you started to discover for yourself the power of nature and how it can radically change, you know, well-being and confidence and our health, our physical health as well?
I think, yes. I mean, it sort of came up on me by stealth, I think. After I created the little herb garden, I started growing vegetables quite soon after, and then we made a vegetable garden, which I still largely look after, not entirely on my own, but and that, you know, that I think I began to realize there's a sort of holistic aspect to gardening that it is, because I think food and nutrition is so important too. To me, there's a sort of circularity to it, that it connects us with the source of food, the source of life, and then literally physically nourishing yourself when you harvest the produce. So I think I was sort of living it for quite a while without reflecting on it. And I was also finding, as my job, as I became a consultant in the NHS, and over time my job became more pressured. There was a phase when there was quite a lot of cuts in the trust that I worked for, and services were very hard pressed. I began to recognize that through gardening at the weekend, I was sort of able to decompress. You know, my mind would quieten down, and I would come back into the house feeling sort of renewed in some way, actually. Because I think the physical, you know, the hard physical work, vegetable gardening can be quite hard physical work. You know, that releases quite a lot of, negative feelings and you know, frustration and anger or whatever. So it's a mixture of, there's so many different ways and different levels on which gardening can help people. But I did begin to notice them in myself. And then I began to sort of research it and discovered how much, in very interesting science, there is, a lot of it quite recently conducted research projects. And I wanted to sort of gather them all up. And I also wanted to tell the story of my own grandfather, who had been a prisoner of war in the First World War. And I'd grown up with the story of how he'd really recovered his health and his well-being through a year-long program of horticultural rehabilitation in the early 1920s. It was just a moment in my life about 6 years ago when all these different things came together in my mind, and that set me in motion, researching and writing the book and interviewing people. I traveled around and interviewed people on various different kinds of community projects, mental health projects, addiction projects, prison projects, and so on. And some of those stories do appear in the book. Some of those people who I interviewed really, really contributed to my understanding of how gardening can help us a great deal.
Mm.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
And this podcast is obviously about things I forgot were good for me. And it's strange, isn't it? Because I always think that obviously nature is part of us. We can't separate ourselves from nature and from the world around us. And yet we seem to have done a pretty good job of it up to now. Why do you think it is that we sort of had forgotten, or we are forgetting, just how good nature is for us? What happens, do you think, in that process between us obviously living at a time when we were very connected to nature? It was part of our heartbeat, if you like, of, you know, we would grow vegetables, we'd eat them, we'd provide for ourselves, we would be outside more. How did we get from that into this situation where, you know, we kind of, a lot of us feel so disconnected, or we don't even think about nature as being one and the same thing as us?
I think it's developed over a long period of time, actually, that disconnection. And you can trace it back to the Industrial Revolution in its roots, and, you know, more recently then the sort of technological revolution, the digital revolution, and so on. But I think also changes in childhood, and I think, you know, that's been a big change in the last 30 or 40 years. If you look at the figures of how much children's free play in gardens and parks and so on has diminished, really, and how much screen time many children are exposed to in its different forms. So I think there is a bit of a crisis in terms of that I think if children don't experience the great pleasures of you know, creating dens, let's say, in nature, or just actually, you know, picking, harvesting, you know, my children used to love, for example, picking sorrel in the garden and wild strawberries and things like that. Just the sense of, you know, nature's bounty, which is there for us to enjoy in certain kinds of settings. So I think if that's lacking, then the disconnect really becomes more and more profound, and people become distrustful of nature. They at some level, it makes them anxious because it's strange. You know, I can give you an example of how one of the projects I visited for at-risk youth, which was run by the Chicago Botanic Garden, the kids on that project, which was located on the south side of Chicago, very, very rough part of the city, they'd never put their hands in the soil, for example. And they were really nervous about doing it. And dirt in their mind was bad. So, you know, the initial phase of that project was all about habituating the kids. And amazingly, of course, you know, after a season of gardening, they're all loving it. Or maybe it's not so amazing, but you know, they're often amazed mm-hmm. by it, how much they really do love it, and how good it makes them feel, and how much sort of empowerment they get from it, from growing food, and a sense of self-esteem that they've done something worthwhile. Mm-hmm. Another example that comes to my mind is someone I interviewed in one of the prisons, I think it was Rikers Island in New York, who again had, you know, he'd always thought the best food came in the supermarkets in, you know, plastic packaging, and growing his own tomatoes on this project. He was saying, you know, when I leave, I'm going to be doing this for my family. And he said, it's just like, I don't get it. Why has nobody told me this? It's like printing your own money. You know, I can grow my own food. And so there is a bit of a, you know, it's a kind of secret that's kept from people at one level with the commodification of life, isn't it?
Mm. I guess it harks back to that thing about, there's an element of being self-sufficient, isn't there? Which is actually a really good thing for our confidence, our self-esteem, our sense of trust, our sense of control and empowerment, you know, in life, that actually there are things that we can do to, like you say, you know, grow something, to have something nutritious, to create something of our own that we can kind of be part of. And I suppose, going back to what you were saying about children, that's why it's even more important to make sure that obviously there's accessibility for all children, no matter if they have a garden or not, that actually they have open space, they have an opportunity to get close to nature, you know, if they live in the city, or if there's certain accessibility issues or inequality, that actually even more important that we need to focus on actually providing nature and open spaces and opportunities for every single child and every single young person to actually have that experience and to actually, you know, discover the magic of nature and gardening.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, there are some great gardening projects in operating in some schools, but it would be great if every school had a garden, and that kids really, and that it wasn't just seen as a sort of add-on, that it was integrated into the curriculum. Mm. You know, there's some great examples of that, because you can teach, kids can learn so much through the garden, about biology, about everything, food, cooking, doesn't matter, you know, they can, and with the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis, it's really important, I think, for young people to grow up understanding this sort of fundamental way that nature works, and, you know, what composting means, for example, you know, because I think if you understand that, then you understand why throwaway plastic is bad, mm. you know.
So for our listeners, and maybe for Rada as well, because I'm very lucky in our house, my wife is an excellent gardener and does lots of gardening. If you're wanting to start your kind of first garden, a bit like you did when you started your little herb garden, what kind of, from a practical point of view, what sort of plants should we be looking to get started with? What would be a good starter point for anyone who wants to start cultivating the next Chelsea flower show?
I'm taking notes, Sue, here.
Yes. No, but you see, I think that's exactly the problem, isn't it? That, you know, I speak as someone whose husband's, you know, created a number of wonderful Chelsea flower show gardens, is that we can be too ambitious at Absolutely. The outset and try and grow things that are too delicate or too fussy, or, you know. So I think start really simple and start with things that kind of will they're pretty reliable, you know. And I mean I still love growing sunflowers, you know, they still amaze me, and they are fantastic, you know. And grow, you know, that's why I started with herbs, because they excited me, but they wouldn't turn everybody on, you know. It's like if actually what you really want to grow are colourful flowers, then start with, you know, annual flowers. They, you know, they are so rewarding, and they're pretty reliable, really. So I think it's really what, you know, what do you find beautiful, what would excite you to be able to cook, or, you know, or yes, if it's bunches of flowers to adorn your house, or, you know, if it's growing parsnips or your own potatoes, I don't think it matters, really. All of those things are fairly straightforward, And you know, you can just get going, get a grow bag and grow tomatoes.
You mentioned tomatoes, Sue. Tomatoes are my favorite thing in the entire world. I love tomatoes. I could eat, I don't know how many tomatoes I could eat in a row, but a lot. And actually, that was one of the first things I ever grew myself in a pot in my flat on a balcony in London. And I've never had so much joy than opening up the little window and grabbing those tomatoes. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think a lot of things which kind of turn me off gardening or have done in the past is that sense of sort of outcome of having to do things a certain way, of having to understand the language around gardening and to know what every plant is called and that I should know what its name is. And frankly, that's just frightened me because I'm like, I don't understand anything. I don't even know what the basic terminology is, because it can be another language. But I suppose, like you say, it's more about working out what your passion is, what you love seeing. And for me, that's kind of wildflowers or poppies or, you know, things like that to bring me joy. So actually, I think to kind of remove the outcome and remove at least the societal outcome, I suppose, of what gardening should look like, and actually just make it yours.
Yes, I think that's right. And you know what? I mean, I'm not very good at plant names, I have to confess. That's partly because I've got lazy over the years, because I've got a walking plant encyclopedia, you know, in the house. You know, I guess, what is that called again? You know, I've forgotten. But, you know, there's this fantastic app. I haven't even got that, actually, but I do know it exists. There are a number of them that will help you identify plants if that really... really does.
My wife uses that. It's like Shazam, which you can find music. What, you know, for music's playing, you can find. There's one for plants now, and she uses it all the time. You know, so she comes in. She's, I think, she's very knowledgeable, but she's just
been
using this app.
One day I'll know all the Latin names.
Of course, it can be intimidating at the outset, but I do think it's fairly simple and easy in essence gardening. And of course, there's a whole spectrum, you know, the higher end of gardening, the more skilled, you know, kind of complicated, difficult to grow plants. You just don't plunge in at that level. Start with things. I mean, radishes are another thing that I just think are amazing. You know, if you like radishes, they grow so fast and they're so tasty.
That reminds me of Peter Rabbit and Beatrice Potter radishes. Whenever I hear a radish, I'm like, oh, I want to create a garden like Mr. McGregor's garden. Just have Peter Rabbit in it. I think you're right, though. Like, if you think about, let's use the analogy of cooking. So, you know, just like you have ingredients for cooking, the ingredients for gardening are, you know, a seed, you know, some soil, some water and some sunshine, and a lot of love. And that's kind of, you know, hopefully if you add all those together, you'll actually kind of grow something and a plant will appear. When you bring it down to that level, you actually just, again, you're reminded of the magic of nature and life, and how in that one seed is all of that information, everything contained, and everything happens at the right time, you know, in the right process, in the right order. And I think that's also something that I get from nature, where you can look around and you can see, well, actually, there are, just like in life, there are supposed to be periods of expansion and growth. There are supposed to be periods of consolidation and rest. And there are supposed to be different periods of activity for different times. And I think that's also a comfort to me sometimes, you know, when I've been going through different things in my life, to say, do you know what, there are cycles, and these are natural cycles. And in a world that pushes kind of productivity and pushes you to keep going and keep going and keep going until you totally just get burnt out, I think that's a really reassuring thing to know and to find in nature as a reminder.
Yeah, I think being in touch with the cycle of the seasons is a very important aspect of gardening. And, you know, what it offers us as an antidote to the rest of life, as you indicate, with sort of productivity and targets and a very kind of much more linear view of time. And, you know, the great thing about the seasons is that spring will come round again. So if something doesn't thrive this year, you know, there's a good chance, if you have another go, it may next year, because very often it's not something you've done as the gardener. It may just be to do with, you know, a late chill, as it were, that particular plant didn't like, or lack of rain at a crucial time. So I'm a real believer in hedging your bets, growing enough of a range of things so that some things will come good, and even if others don't, it's not such a disaster. But you do have this sense of, oh, well, I can try again. I can have another go next year. And I think that's very helpful.
Well, Sue, it's been so lovely to talk to you again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm always feeling inspired when I talk to you, and I want to get out there. Well, I might even go out there this afternoon, and if the light stays out, and have a play around and maybe do some weeding, which is also, I find, that very therapeutic, actually. Clearing up the garden, you know, and making room for new plants is, I find, very, very therapeutic. And
I agree.
Yeah, there's something lovely about that. So thank you so much. Where can people get your book? Is it available in most bookshops and online?
It's available in most bookshops. It's in paperback and hardback. It's also an audio book read by me.
Fantastic.
It's on all the major outlets, as it were.
That's amazing.
And independent bookshops, you know, it's always good to promote the independents. So, yes.
That's amazing. Well, honestly, Sue, you have really reframed for me how good outside housework can be. So, so thank you ever so much. Like Giles says, we're so thrilled to have you on. Thank you for all you do and all your messages around spreading nature and how important it is for us to get back out there and get connected to it. Thank you. Oh,
thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
So that's the end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it. You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.